tomorrow, March 8th, is the International Women's Day, a day devoted to celebrating the achievements of the women and seeking gender equality. And so the UN theme for 2025 International Women's Day is For All Women and Girls, Rights, Equality, Empowerment. Now, the national theme for South Sudan is empowering women and girls to promote equality, safety, and also a healthy environment. Today, we'll be focusing on the specific group of the survivors of conflicts-related sexual violence. And so joining us to discuss this more and more is Sheila B. Kerathut, the ONMIS Senior Women's Protection Advisor, joining us on this conversation. You are most welcome, Sheila.
Thank you. Good morning to all.
Good morning. All right. On the other hand, we also have with us Jacqueline Asiwa, the Executive Director of Center for Inclusive Governance, Peace and Justice, and Non-Profit and Non-Partisan Community, CSO. You're most welcome to Radio Mirai this morning, Jacqueline.
Thank you very much, Miraya.
Yes. Let's go right over to our talking point, to our conversation. And what's the status of the rights for survivors of conflict related to sexual violence in South Sudan?
Let me start by saying that it could be better. And while there are some few laws which protect everyone, there's no specific law which protects conflict-related sexual violence survivors. And the whole issue of conflict-related sexual violence. So there is a gap in the law in relation to survivors of conflict-related sexual violence. The first one I would say, the criminalization of CRSV, for short, conflict-related sexual violence, is a must. Because given the context of South Sudan, where CRSV is widespread, it would show the lawmakers' will that they want to give better protection. There will be justice and accountability for perpetrators of conflict-related sexual violence.
All right. And by criminalizing this, are you optimistic? Or are you giving optimism that there will be reduction in the cases that are related to this?
I think one step at a time. It will act as a deterrent. It will show trust in the justice chain. And it will also bring forward survivors who would be able to feel that their rights are being protected in seeking and accessing justice.
Well, let me come down to Nasiwa. You know, in the view of this year's theme that talks about empowerment of the women, so what action is required in order to give the effect to empowering the women and girls, survivors of the sexual gender-based violence particularly, or sexual and conflict-related violence?
Good morning again to the listeners of Miraya, and happy International Women's Week and Women's Month and Women's Day. I could take from where my colleague Sheila has just said that there's some progress in terms of reduction of conflict-related sexual violence, but still there is no proper legal framework to protect conflict-related sexual violence victims. And also the recognition of the existence of sexual violence victims in conflict is still also not publicly recognized. And in most cases, sexual violence victims during conflict are treated like gender-based violence in our communities. And we know that conflict-related sexual violence is a form of gender-based violence that is perpetrated by both men in uniform, that is regular military, and maybe irregular militaries, or we could call them like non-state military groups. And in our situation, we have seen increasing patterns of conflict-related sexual violence, especially when conflict occurs, women and girls and children are targeted. And at our organization, we are working with our conflict-related sexual violence, but there's less assistance given to them, and also there's no much in terms of access to justice to these victims. Currently, we are having the anti-gender-based violence bill, which is being supported with different institutions, including UNMISS, UNFPA, and spearheaded by Minister of Gender, Child and Social Welfare. And in our revision of the law, which is currently going on, we are also pushing to ensure that conflict-related sexual violence victims are clearly defined, and that their right to remedy and their protection is guaranteed in that law. We are also having the transitional justice process, where we have the hybrid court, and as you all know, we have the two laws now, particularly on Commission for Truth, Healing and Reconciliation and the Compensation and Reparations Authority. But the statute to establish the hybrid court, which provides for justice to victims of the conflict, which include conflict-related sexual violence victim, has not been even progressive. And that this year's theme, international theme, is saying accelerate action. And that means we have to call on to the government of South Sudan and the African Union, whose mandate and who are required to establish this hybrid court. Because it has overly delayed since 2015, I could say, and 2018 with the revitalized agreement, there's no much progress on the hybrid court. So for me, justice must be served for victims of sexual violence in conflict, and this calls for an accelerated process to establish the hybrid court so that conflict-related sexual violence victims can get redress.
All right. Yes, Sila, let me come to you. Before you move on to that, we do understand that violence happens to both genders, both men and women. But now, why would you think the women and girls are the major victims or the major targets of conflict-related sexual violence in South Sudan?
In fact, conflict-related sexual violence happens to all, men, women, boys and girls. But the impact is really heavier and more cruel on the girls and women. And this we have found through our documentation, monitoring of conflict-related sexual violence. For example, just to give a quick read down, last year, out of the 229 CRSV incidents we verified at UNMISS, and let me say, this is just a small number of what is really the case. These are only the cases which we were able to verify. And out of that, we had 260 survivors. And the numbers are telling: 150 women, 101 girls, 2 boys and 7 men. So out of the evidence, we can say that, the impact, as I said earlier, is bigger.
It's higher on women and girls.
Yes, so that's why we... Today, we take the opportunity to talk about the rights and what survivors need. I would like to come back to one of the things you mentioned earlier, what is needed to empower women and girl survivors in this particular context. The law is very important because it gives confidence. Access to justice is also very important, but there are other aspects which are very much needed. Survivors have demonstrated incredible resilience and strength and in the face of their harrowing experiences. So what do we need to support them and to empower them? Access to health care comes top on the list. It is a paramount, really, and duty bearers have to ensure that survivors have access to comprehensive medical care, which includes physical as well as mental health services. The next one is psychosocial support, a key to their healing. And again, same, duty bearers have to facilitate counseling and support groups to help survivors process their experiences and heal emotionally. The other one is, having been brutalized so much, they need safe spaces and environments which need to be created where they can feel secure and supported. The legal part, we've dealt on that a lot, but there is one aspect I would like to raise, which is provide legal assistance or legal aid to survivors who want to access legal services. Economic empowerment. What is what do you need? We've seen from our work on the ground that survivors of conflict-related sexual violence sort of stigmatize. They're already in poor situations and their situation becomes even more difficult. So we need to find ways of offering them vocational training or skills training, livelihood support, so that they become independent in economically and to regain some financial independence. There are many more, but I would want to raise a last one for now, which is community education. Survivors are not, you know, they come from communities. They are people within families, within communities. And what is needed is to raise awareness about CRSV, to reduce stigma, and to promote a supportive community which they can reintegrate.
Yes, let me come to the question of raising awareness, because I do believe that maybe the actors of this conflict-related sexual violence or the perpetrators may not be aware of the actions they actually do. So, Jacqueline Nasiwa, can you tell us how significant it is to raise an awareness before we talk about the legal aid for these people, the survivors?
Okay, thank you very much. I always say that acts of sexual violence, when someone is committing it, the person knows what they are doing. These people, they know that they are committing a crime, and that any sexual violence in any form is a crime. So they know it, but deliberately during conflict, women are targeted, and children, and also some vulnerable members of the community. So what I could say is that the awareness that we create is for them to know that this is a crime, and that they have to be accountable for their crimes, and they also have the duty to prevent. And I think working with the police and with the military, we have done some awareness with them through the support of UNMIS. We have the joint consultative forums that are held, where we bring also men and women in uniform, those in the security sector, and also civil society actors, where we dialogue on how can we prevent this conflict-related sexual violence and what policy frameworks are required to protect and to prevent future recurrence. And I think these kinds of dialogues is bringing a sense of urgency for them, but also it's reminding them of their obligation to protect civilians during conflict. And I could say that awareness raising is playing a big role, because also communities get to know what is the patterns and how can they prevent it, and what role they can play to support victims in the communities. And one of the things I could say is that the impact of sexual violence in conflict is great, because it stigmatizes the whole community, where communities feel like they are vulnerable. And you know, in our African setting, when your wife is raped, and then that value of your wife goes down, because you married your wife and that woman is supposed to be your wife, and if she's raped by another man, it shows your vulnerability as a man not to protect your wife. And this makes the man also to pick up arms or to look for ways of how they can revenge. And this is how far conflict-related sexual violence is playing in terms of violence in our society. The other one is that these women, when they get rape, sometimes they have children, they get pregnant. And who is responsible for these children born out of rape? It's left to the woman. And in most cases, with our experience working with survivors, if they are married people, their spouses deny them. If they are not married, their family also deny them and deny the child. And we have seen situations where they call the child names like the child of the cow, this bastard, you know, this come alone child. So they give them names. And these are children who are innocent. They don't know why they are born into this world and how they are born. And this gives their mothers also that high level of stigma. They even hide sometimes the identity of these children. And when these children go to school, they ask them, who is your father? And the child doesn't know. So they end up giving names of maybe their relatives to be the fathers. And a slight misunderstanding in the family, they are reminded that you are not our child. So this stigmatizes the child. And one of the things we keep advocating is that these children need to be given recognition as citizens with full rights without their fathers, so that their mothers can solely be able to give them their nationality and they become full citizens of the country. So until now, the nationality law is still not favoring these children born out of rape. And this is one issue that policymakers, we dialogue with them, they need to pick it up. Education for these children remain challenging. The fathers sometimes, they choose to pay the children that they give birth to, and then these children who are born out of rape, they are excluded. Mm-hmm. And you know, most of these victims, they are women who are very vulnerable in the community, and they cannot be able to afford to pay. So there's a lot at stake, and that's why we take conflict-related sexual violence very serious, because much as women suffer gender-based violence, but conflict-related sexual violence victims suffer double, and they need to be protected.
All right, we'll continue shortly after the break.
أنتم تستمعون إلى راديو ميرايا.
Good morning. This is the breakfast show where the nation's big conversations begin.
Station by station. Land of the nation.
Welcome back. It's 28 minutes to the top of the hour. And in the studio is Sheila Kitarut and Jacqueline Nasiwa. And we're here talking about conflict-related sexual violence. And just before the break, Jacqueline was speaking on some of the issues that come with rape and children born out of rape. Now, I want to bring you back a little bit to awareness. And in this angle, I want to look at the women and the girls who are being raped, and so and even men who get raped. Sometimes these people don't even know that this is a crime. They are perpetrated upon, and they're not aware that their rights have actually been violated. What can be done to create this awareness and empower them so that things like stigma as well as non-reporting can be addressed?
Let me start, if I may, on one thing, just to give you from the experience we've seen during our monitoring and our contacts with survivors. To highlight exactly what you said is something which, you know, women who are abducted during conflict, etc., or children. So one of the questions asked, were you, you know, any sexual violence or what happened or whatever? No, not at all. That was not there. But he made me his wife.
Oh, dear.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's the context and how it is interpreted, which is very important to understand. You rightly point out that many do not realize that, in fact, this is a crime. She has just experienced a horrible crime. So there's a lot to do in terms of examining the language or the concepts and how to bridge this gap in terms of the language and concept and what it really means as a crime.
Okay.
So a lot of awareness is needed on that, and we rely a lot, you know, when we work with our partners, like Jacqueline's organizations, there are others with whom we work, to do this kind of, you know, peeling the onions slowly, to be able to explain that what has happened to you is in fact not your fault, but it is a crime. So there's this one. Just to pick up on something else also, in terms of awareness, there are three things which are very important. The communique, which was assigned by South Sudan and the United Nations in 2014, 10 years last year, and, you know, which looks at conflict-related sexual violence and gives a sort of framework from which to work by the government and others. The armed forces, the action plan for the armed forces to address conflict-related sexual violence is there and needs to be implemented by the armed forces, by SSPDF and others, 100%. We are not there. There's more to do on that. Secondly, there is also the action plan for the police, and we see progress on the implementation. So awareness raising is at different levels within the armed forces, within the police and others who commit, but also from the community and from the people, where then there is a better understanding of what exactly is the matter, why is it important to address it, and why it is important for people to access justice when this crime has been committed.
All right.
Yes, Sila, before we come to this, I would like to understand, on the mode of reporting these cases of a conflict-related sexual violence, a number of people, the figure you saw cited, could be less than what is left undocumented, because people don't come out to report. I don't know how best you can encourage the public. Yeah, this is somebody who got raped. She has a husband. I mean, how would she have the courage to bring out to the husband, this happened, let's go and report, because later on the circumstances back in the community may be so different.
This is exactly what I said earlier. Supportive communities, supportive environment, where then they don't need to stay silent. And, you know, not only that, the support, but also it's a multifaceted issue, because reporting and then you don't get anything. That is, you don't get support in terms of medical or supported through the justice chain, etc. People would want to then look at things from a different angle, where they would want to at least benefit from something small.
Mm-hmm.
So everything needs to work together. And it's a daunting task, and we rely a lot on, you know, those who are really on the ground,
like Jacqueline.
All right. Jacqueline, what message now do you have for the policymakers and the international partners, to advance and accelerate the survivor-centered approach?
I could say that to the international partners, there's a lot that is required to support a sexual violence victim. And one of the things is to integrate programs that are victim-centered, so that if you are working with health, if you are working with education, if you are supporting rule of law, it's an integrated process of your programming, so that we can mainstream the approach to protection of women in conflict and also gender-based violence, even in the communities. To the government, I think we need to recognize that sexual violence victims exist, and that they require urgent needs to be addressed. And I always say that the government need to integrate a plan to include sexual violence victims. For example, in the hospitals, we have the one-stop center, but they are mostly supported by international partners. So we are saying every year the government should have a budget that is included to support these one-stop centers so that women can get medical and other services like psychosocial.
All right. So what about to the public? What are the messages you have for them as you wind up these conversations?
To the public, they need to stay vigilant during conflict and to also monitor and report sexual violence committed by armed and paramilitary groups. And they need not to stigmatize victims, but they need to be of support to them and to provide some kind of counseling and also help them in terms of referral pathways.
Yes, to see as well, what is the UN mission in South Sudan, particularly in this regards, going to work with the government to help in the reduction of these cases? As you say, your last message as well to the public.
There are many things we do. We should have another conversation because it's a lot.
Yes, but, I know.
What we would want to, but as we end, there are a few very specific things I would like to say with regards to what policymakers could do and international partners could do to advance and accelerate survivor-centered approach. Just to pick on that, and then I'll tell you my last point. Jacqueline has said most of it, but to summarize, survivors absolutely need to be at the center of every intervention. Prioritize safety and well-being, and that's the first thing we would need to focus on. Promote confidentiality and consent when working with survivors of conflict-related sexual violence. We've talked about strengthening the legal framework. It is a must. Enhancing collaboration and coordination, that's what we do together with others. Empower the survivors themselves, which is a most important point, and involve them in development of programs, invest in prevention and education. And my message really to survivors of conflict-related sexual violence during this, as Jacqueline puts it, day, week, and month focusing on women, I would like to tell them that your strength and resilience are truly remarkable. You have faced unimaginable challenges, and your courage in the face of such adversity is inspiring. Please know that you're not alone. There are people and organizations who can support you, advocate for your rights. Your voice matters, and your experiences are important. Please seek help. Stop just remaining by yourself. And remember that your worth, and this I would like to, you know, I'm just trying to raise one of the points Jacqueline made. The worth of a woman, the worth of a sexual, of a CRSV victim is not defined by what happened to her, but by herself, who she is, and the strength she carries within herself. We would like to help. There are others who would want to help. And that's the final message.
Thank you so much, Sheila. Thank you, Jacqueline, for joining us this morning on the Mirror Breakfast Show.